Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the show, One Cell, One Light Radio, with your host, Dr. Hildegard Stanninger, commonly known as Dr. Hildy. And today's show, listeners and beloved audience out there, we have a returning guest who has been most gracious of explaining to our world and also to the public. We look at these shows as the public education, Dr. Zonglin Wang, and he's going to discuss the new updates since the last time he was on the show, not only his papers that have come out, but other colleagues within the area of nanotechnology, and it's just growing so fast. And we've also are going to discuss during the show nano cupcakes and nano chocolate nut custards. No, it's not in your pantry. These are the terms that are used in industry to describe different nanotechnologies. And those terms I learned from a client of mine named Deb, Miss Deb. Thank you, Dr. Wang, for being on the show with me today.
It's a great pleasure to come back again.
I tell you, I really enjoy, I learn so much from you, and I love reading the papers that you forward to Shoshana and I to review and link to these particular shows. But it was so wonderful, and I shared with you as we were waiting to come online in audience. What happened today is I had an individual in our office, and she, registered nurse, absolutely did not know anything about nano at all. And it was such a pleasure to give the document that our U.S. government has made under the nano incubation and nanotechnologies that features Dr. Wang's work. So it was so nice to show, here's your picture on page 8 of that document, and you're going to be my guest on the radio show. So it was so
nice. I even didn't know, but I was featured on that, but too busy to work, you know.
Right. I'll send you a couple of these pamphlets because they're really nice. Now, you have made, since the last time we were on the show together, you just released the press releases and everything in reference to the new, energy battery, the new battery that you developed. And then you've also done, since that time, that was like November, December, since that time, you've now made a new tactile, in other words, you can feel, touch, which is artificial skin with nanomaterials. So there are so many new terms for our audience and myself. We just want to know all about it, Dr. Wang.
Okay. Since we talked the last time for the last year or so, we have made three major advances. So I'll go by one and to introduce to our audience. So the first
Excellent.
One you talk about is this battery design. What is the basic idea for a battery? A battery is to store electricity and store the charge. And normally you need to plug the battery to a power source to charge up, then use it. And once the battery is used up, that's a dead battery. So about a year ago, 2 years ago, I came out with an idea. I said, well, can we make a battery self-charging? What do I mean? Is that we integrate our nano generator, which we discussed before, inside the battery. So if you have a battery, you just mechanically press it periodically, and this nano generate charge, and same time inject the charge into the battery and store it. So basically, you look like a coin type of battery, but it's not a battery. It's more than a battery. It's called self-charging power pack. So if you put this under the shoes, you're walking, and this battery is charged, and then you can use this battery to power your calculator or power other small things. So this invention was an idea was 2 years ago until last year. We published a paper, and this invention was the top 10 major discoveries in physical science by a journal called Physics World, the British journal, for 2012. And, that was the so-called self-charging power pack. And as a result, I was invited to have a live interview on CNN, and there was also a Bloomberg Plant Forward program recorded us. Scientific America interviewed me. There's a lot of public interest about that. So that is inspired a lot of interest in this kind of research.
Excellent. And congratulations on that award. That was a major accomplishment. And you've been pioneering in this field for a number of years, and it's nice to see you getting your recognition that you deserve.
So this technology, what's the unique of this? Okay, let me give you a simple explanation. Normally, if you have a generator, you convert a mechanical energy into electricity, then you have a battery store the electricity into electrochemical energy. It seems like you go a double step. You first from mechanical energy to electric energy, then from electric energy to electrochemical energy. That's the normal battery does. So two things, generator and a battery. But now through the new design, we combine them into one thing, into one system. So from mechanical energy directly to electrochemical energy, so the battery is charged. Instead of the double step, and we use single step, the efficiency improved by a factor of 5.
Oh, my.
For power conversion. And that's a lot of people get excited about that because the relative improvement is so huge and so significant for energy. So they are very interested in this new ideas, new concept behind battery technology.
Right, and a prime example is like you see in children, they wear the shoes that light up or, you know, have lights on them. And it's battery pack systems that are used in that type of technology so that when you wash it, it's sealed, but at the same time, they always light up and self-generating.
That's right. So that's the one of the niche applications we can see in a general, there's a kid's products and the shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the first thing we made on this self-charging power pack. And technology point of view is that what we major do is redesign the structure inside the battery, and so we put the piezoelectric materials instead of general, they call separate the cathode from anode. So we put the piezoelectric materials that not only serve as a separate, but also serve as a power converter, and then that's changed the structure of the whole thing.
Wow. Now, with this advancement in the battery, it not only, as we discussed with toys, but there's numerous applications that can occur with it.
Okay, that's true, and that's the first thing we did. The second thing I want to bring up is what we call triboelectric nanogenerator, and this is something we have so much in advance in the recent months. And let me tell you what's the unique things about this one. Every morning when we get up is two effects we need to use. The first one, if the day is still dark, you need to turn on light, right? We need light. So the first thing we need light. The second thing we need is that you start walking. When you're walking, your shoes sliding back and forth with the floor, you have friction. You know, we know that ever we have human on Earth, right?
Right.
What's new about this? But we found the major application we missed for years. They said, well, why? What do we miss? This trouble effect is normally viewed as a negative effect. For example, in winter time, and if the days are dry, and sometimes our hands can be charged. So you shook hands with somebody
right.
else. Sometimes you have a little spike.
We call that static electricity, and you get
static
shocked.
Electricity.
And even in electronics, when they're manufacturing and everything, they give the individuals a special strap shoe—not shoe, but a strap that goes on their foot to their shoe, so they can be grounded, so they don't create that static electricity. Yes.
Because the static electricity generates a high voltage that can easily burn out of the transistors. So we use all the measures to try to eliminate this effect. But we found a new application for this. And we use polymer materials. If you have two pieces of polymer materials, one is to lose electron, one is to gain electron. Then you stack them together, just like a layer of the structure. One is lose electron, one is gain electron. Stack one on top of the other one. Then you sliding one against the other one. Then you generate triboelectric static charge on both surfaces.
Oh.
One has positive charge, the other has negative charge. And then if you separate it with a small distance, if you keep the two polymer a small distance, how small? I say like a hair width, 100 micron, 50 micron. You can generate 100 volts across that distance.
100 volts?
100 volts across distance.
Wow.
Now, if you use this 100 volts to drive the electron to flow in across the electrode, is where the electrode, on the top of the film, on the bottom of the other film, you have electrode attached. And if this is connected external load, when these two polymers come in contact and separation, there's current flow through the electrode back and forth. So we found this one about 2 years ago, and we spent 6 months to try to find out what is the mechanism. What's the physics behind that? We finally understood that. Today, we use this one. We can use all kind of motions. We can use the put in the shoes. We design the shoes. We can drive 50 LED lit up when you're walking. How large a size? It's just basically like a fingernail size can drive 50 LEDs just walking. And we put this one in the rotating tires, automobile tires. You can generate electricity. I will put it on all kind of mechanical actions that involve friction. We can generate electricity from anywhere, everywhere, and I find this have a big advantage. The big advantage is that friction is everywhere.
Right, friction is,
And it's all the time. It's all the time. Can we put this on the road? And can we put this on the tires? So we made this all possible today. So since we talked last time, let me give you the performance.
Mm-hmm.
The maximum voltage output by these small materials can reach 1,500 volts.
Wow.
And the power reach a few watt. You know, if you think a size, like your palm size, you know, the palms are 5 by 5 centimeters, one layer,
right.
You can have 2 to 3 watt power.
And sometimes with 2 to 3 watts, 3 watts can sometimes generate, a one-bedroom home and stuff in some remote areas. So this would be highly efficient for energy conversion, and sustainability.
Yeah, and this will have a lot of applications. So let me give you a technical performance. Per square meter, for a square meter size, we can have 100 watt output. And if we optimize that, we should reach 300 watt. area of 1 meter square. And if you scale up, this can really be very useful for a lot of areas. For example, you can put on the highway, and when a car run over, you can light up a street light.
But when you put it on like a highway, is it mixed in the asphalt, or is it just like sprinkled on the road?
It's just like a sprinkle spread on a road, like a sheet.
Oh, okay. And then how long does that last, that type of material? I mean, does it like last a year, 5 years, or do you always have to replace it?
This you can choose the most robust material to make it, because that's the big advantage. That what material you can choose? You can choose rubber.
Mm.
You can choose nylon. All these very robust materials to make it. You can even choose metal. One side can be metal. In that case, routine materials, we can make this happen. So as of today, the power output is so large, and we have a lot of application for that. Just like you said, in a remote area, there's no electricity. We can use light wind. We can use light wind to drive this, and at least it should be able to lit up the light in the evening, so that the person who stay in a remote area can have electricity for lighting.
Yes, and that makes it convenient. And then, you know, in these types of, I'm going to call it the power supply of it, does it have, like, the battery in it that it stores it? Or, you know, like, if it's on the road, how is the energy collected, you know, the volts?
Sometimes you can use instantaneous to drive the light, or you can use a storage unit to store it for other purpose applications. So you sometimes you need to use a storage unit, like a battery.
Okay. Because I envision it, you know, being sprinkled all over the roads and the cars going over it and it's collecting, but how is the energy collected? I could see if there was wires in the road. It's just because I'm like a novice at, you know, how you're going to wire it to get it to light up the light bulb.
So basically you can use metal wires. The top is aluminum wires, or even whatever metal you have that can use for the wiring. So use the routine materials that can be cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this is the things that the performance is so great now. Ever since we talked last time, that's I want to bring up this to you again, so our audience can share. That say any movement, any kind of, we can do it. We recently put it in two places. We put in a jacket, you know, it's just wear a jacket. We put in the jacket for a person to walk, just walk back and forth. The jacket will flinking back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Just that kind of action is the power can instantaneously drive 10 LED light. So in front of the chest, we have 10 LED light, and then when you're walking, this jacket size about 5 by 5 centimeter. It's about like a 2 inch by 2 inch size. Those 10 LED lit up.
Mm. That could be very phenomenal. And in this though, it's where it is connected to the, like your example with the jacket. The jacket has some kind of, I'm going to say, coupling a unit that goes to the LED to light up, versus with it being made out of polymers and the metal opposite, as you stated earlier, could it ever be in the future as a coating on these clothings or any of that, and then generate it?
We can use the fabric. We can use fabric, use silk. So any material we can use for this purpose. That's why the application is so broad. So I'm thinking maybe in the future for, like, you know, fashion shows, you
mm-hmm.
can have this technology built in, and then if you have the clothes, and when person walk, the clothes flink back and forth. Use this kind of mechanical action, you can have small LED light flashing when the person walks.
It would be quite a show. I know some designers that would love it, you know.
Yeah, designer for this kind of this purpose. So you can see that this is the one. The second thing, we truly build this one inside the shoes. We have a pair of Nike shoes. We put this design into the shoes. And on the back of the shoes, we have a row of LED light. When the kid walk around, the electricity generates just flashing the LED light. So that's make it really a niche for this kind of application for that.
And it's in a very good niche, you know, not only for show and tell of, you know, letting people see the lights on the shoes, but I will say many runners, many individuals that might be outside doing athletic activities at nighttime, you know, or on a sidewalk or crossing the street, with those types of shoes you can see them versus just being a black image. You know, there. And I say that because in this, if you live in the city or in like in Los Angeles, in certain areas where they have apartments or other housing areas, they make the lights very dim. So if someone's dressed in black, it's very hard to see them when you stop at a corner or anything. So I could see a very safety conscious area that way with the lights. Continue,
that's
Dr.
Correct.
Wang.
So in that case, that absolutely that's be the case for one of the niche application for that. And furthermore, we also make this into various things. We're making this into whistle type of thing. You blow it, and there's electricity come out of that, and it lit up a dozens of LEDs, like an exit sign. If the airflow, we use the airflow, can also to drive the exit sign to flash it. You know,
right? And because in many of these buildings, you know, if the lighting goes out, you don't see because there's no natural light, no windows or anything. And even if you took this technology and used it, like, I don't know if it'd be a thin film tape or whatever it may be, as you described it, meaning when it's into the commercial realm, that you could even put it through the AC ducts, where the exhaust is coming out and make tremendous energy that way.
That's right. In the AC duct, and also in many other places that I'm thinking. So this is also, I think, further, because a lot of cases that we think in doing, for example, if some natural disaster occurs, something earthquake or something happens, suddenly a region or city lost power, then how do we get our cell phone charged? So we build this one inside the shoes, and beside the shoes we have a cell phone jacket. So we put the cell phone inside the jacket, and the wire hook up to the generator built inside the shoes. Then you just walk, and your cell phone be charged.
Well, that's excellent. That's excellent.
So in the case you have no electricity, you have a way to communicate.
Right. And that's so important. And the first thing, you know, when you have one door in an office, in and out, they always try to make sure you have a phone so that if something happens, you can call 911 or any of these areas or your next office to get help. So especially when you're in a natural disaster, absolutely no electricity. I was in one in Canada one time. I was 21 days through that ice storm, no electricity. So it can be rough, okay? And
it can be very rough.
Yeah. And then with all these hurricanes that individuals went through, and even in New York, and they've got all their situations there, and Katrina, and all of these things, it is so well needed. Even like what happened with Boston recently. They still have electricity and everything, but if it was where electricity was turned off, they would need this device.
Exactly. That's what we think. So we think new energy, but energy we need at a very important moment. So this is the recent development we have been doing, and we continue to improve the power. And also, I'm thinking further big, because, you know, in an area of coast area like Los Angeles, you have the high wind from the ocean, Pacific Ocean. But in the Atlanta area, we don't have that. How can we use the city wind to generate electricity? Can we use the smaller scale wind to generate electricity? So we try to develop this technologies just say, can we use the general wind, the wind around the house to generate electricity? So that one is in progress, and I anticipate by late of this year we should have a good solution for that.
Great. You'll be able to tell our audience, too, all about the developments and the testing. I love it.
You know, the one day it was weekend, I walked to the fitness room, the LA Fitness Center.
Uh-huh.
And you see probably 100 people ride the bicycle, do exercise, right?
Right. It's loaded with people doing exercise.
Yeah. What they do, simply say, waste of energy, is that right?
Right.
So you convert, just get healthier, convert biochemical energy into heat, right? Dissipate heat.
Right.
So this cycle just run. And I think, well, if they can build a mind device inside the wheels, they can generate electricity. They can do exercise, we can put the load to generate electricity.
I would ask you a question. When they generate the electricity, because I was involved with my partners years ago, and we all went into different realms, but with the heat pipe technology, where we had the electrical companies could do a rebate for the collection of that energy or the savings of it, I see that possibly with these technologies development that there could be like a credit or trade back into the electrical companies if they could be interlinked somehow.
Yeah, there is a trend, so-called microgrid. You know, the current our electricity is supplied by a major grid, state grid, around this electricity. But you can run a microgrid, the electricity generated around the house, then you can contribute to the lighting or maybe control other in-house use. And you don't have to transmit this to a long distance. So that basically you generate here, the electricity generate here, and use it right here. They can really save a lot of loss during the power transmission.
Right, right. And also it would be a clean energy as compared to sometimes when they have to burn fossil fuels or coal or anything and need that to generate the electricity.
This is the energy we never used before. It's not only clean, but it's waste energy. But more importantly, this kind of motion is everywhere. As there is a life, there is always motion. That's the motion we talk about, that rather than a large magnitude of motion. And this is, and there's a difference from this, from solar energy. There's a lot of research and a lot of application with solar energy. But solar energy has a strong dependence on weather, day and night, and the season.
Mm-hmm.
So the fluctuation can be very large. But for motion, where's the motion? You know, in Los Angeles areas, ocean wave is day and night.
Right, it's continually ebbing. Continually.
Yeah. And there's a calculation. Let me show you these calculations. In the east-west United States coast, the ocean wave energy is 2,100 terawatt. Theoretically, 31 terawatt can become electricity. How large is 31 terawatt? The total energy consumption of the whole world today is 14 terawatt. It means that the ocean wave generates electricity from the north, from the east-west coast of the United States, be sufficient for the world energy need in 15
right.
years.
Right, right. The new world energy needs that is needed, and also with it generating so much on those areas, they'd use like that microgrid, and also there'd be some kind of collection because that would be a lot of energy.
Yes. So in that case, I'm thinking a lot beyond that. I say, well, can we make this big? Can we make this really something toward a large scope energy? Even we are looking at small right now, but, well, why not the big?
Right, right. You got the whole world here.
So I always like to inspire my students use one analogy. I say, back to 1896, when the British scientist Faraday discovered the electromagnetic induction. You know, he used a coil and used some electromagnetic permanent magnets and slide it in and out of the coil. And then he watched the voltmeters swing back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
That was the discovery of electromagnetic induction. And later on, used this phenomenon, engineers, scientists built this generator. You can generate kilowatts, megawatts of energy using this generator. You know, from a simple phenomena, and very hard to predict how much impact to the future power technology. So I say, well, we should look at big. We should look at the further. We do things small, but you never know how big they becomes.
Right, you never know. You never know the direction and how it's going to unfold itself into a bigger picture. But it gives opportunity for individuals and companies and everything along that line. Now, with the development of this tactile, like if you were going to do the ocean, would you sprinkle the you know, like little crystal motes or, you know, or any of that type technology in the ocean and collect it so it goes down to the surface? Or do you put like a cloth or something that has this technology in it to collect it?
We build a device that have this technology inside. So we want to build this three-dimensional, not only just to collect the surface energy, but the energy below the surface.
Yeah, because when you do like below the surface, I remember when they were doing like telephone lines, even for intercoast or where waterways were or anything. Sometimes those telephone lines went under the water to reach other islands or other areas. This would, if it goes on the surface of the bottom of the ocean. It has many opportunities to stay there, and it would sort of still work. If how many inches down from the surface does it work?
Yeah, you always have this the ocean stream. You know, even the
right. The current,
the water flow.
Use
the current. Yeah. Just use the current.
Okay, so one of the applications would be, well, criteria would be to put it into the ocean's current wave so that then it could be continually used with that flow.
Yeah, plus, like give you a simple example, you know, on the optical fiber transmission of these signals across the continental. And this signal has to be amplified once every a few hundred miles or so, right? The signal amplified. They need the power.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So something like this could be a niche application.
Right. Because that amplification would act like a repeater, that, you know, to repeat the signal, right? Or just increase the sound.
Increase the magnitude of the signal. Because it decays as the distance, transmission distance gets longer. So that's a lot of things to think of, but we have to work step by step. And
right.
I think that's why I to use this to stimulate, to excite my students and to work. This could be next, you know, the day in the near future. They can be have big impact. We never know. You know, I'll be always asked by other people, say, what's the application? What's the use of this one? So I just say, well, let's keep the hope.
because
scientific curiosity making. Develop something really magic technology behind it, but we cannot predict things, but let's work on it.
Well, you just coined a term. We went from currently doing smart technology that went into smart technology that has a function and a specific design, and then you just used the term magic. I think you'll be involved in magic technology that'll be coming through, and your students that have studied under you will take that magic further.
Yes, I think that's the one. So that's the pretty much the second thing we do for the major advances since we talked about a year ago. So
mm-hmm.
so that's the third thing is the new thing you just read.
Right.
The tactile image, right? This is something.
Right, tactile image, for the artificial skin, smart skin.
This is, I personally view this is a major advance. We have been working on this one, this paper for 3 years, but this original concept was 6 years ago.
Mm.
6 years ago. Let me give you some basic idea behind this paper. The first one is that our goal is simple, is to interface human with machine, human with robotic with silicon technology. That's what we want to do, interfacing. You know, one of the simple interfacing we use every day is the cell phone, you know, the touchpad cell phone, right? The iPad,
right.
iPhone. This is one way of interface human with electronics. What's beyond? Do we have anything better? Do we have anything much more sensitive, much more resolution, much more secure? Do we have anything like that? So that's how I always try to think, what's next? Well, our goal is to make the information being processed in our brain to be integrated with silicon chips. You know, the silicon chips is the drive
mm-hmm.
everything we use today. Can we make that direct interface? That's what I'm thinking. Well, that's the goal. But where do we start? Where should we start for this one? And this idea came about 6 years ago. We invented a new effect called piezotronic effect. And let me explain to you what that effect is first. Okay.
Right.
Let's look at how does a transistor work. You know, if in your cell phone you have millions or billions of transistors, how does it work? Well, a transistor is the fundamental component of modern electronics. But transistor, tran means three terminals. So one is called source, the other called drain. It's current flow from the source to drain, right? And then there's a gate. What's the gate? The gate is applied across the source drain. The role of the gate is that you apply a voltage to the gate. They control those current flows from source to drain. It's just like give you a simple analogy. Is if you have a river, right? The
right.
water flow along the river. How do you control the total amount of water volume of flow rate across the river? Well, make the river narrow, right?
Right.
Just make the river a little narrow. So the gate voltage is to make the so-called channel width narrow. Make the river narrow. You can control the current flow rate, right? So that's the
mm-hmm.
traditional way we do transistors. This way. But think this way. If we want to control the total amount of current flow through this, let's set at the end of the flow, we set a little dam. You control the height of the dam, like a gate. You control the current flow regardless how wide the river is.
Okay.
You got me?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay. So you control the height of the dam, you can control that. Why don't we use this idea to design transistor? How do we do it? So this was the early idea. We designed this called piezotronic transistor. Well, you say, well, you make it complicated. How do I understand this? Let me give you a simple explanation of the mechanism. Is that we talked about the piezoelectric materials before. For piezoelectric materials, normally when you apply a mechanical stress, there are charges created at the two ends of the material. One side have positive charge, the other side have negative charge. And that's because the polarization of the ions in the materials. Okay, so this is it. But if you use these charges present at the end of the materials, you can raise the, they call a barrier for the current flow, or lower the barrier for the current flow. That's equivalent to you control the height of the dam to control the current.
Right, right.
Okay, we based on this principle, this effect is called piezoelectric effect. We use this effect to design a new transistor, which is called piezoelectric transistor. So the paper you read is about this. Well, the question is that how do you control these piezo charges? Is that you apply a stress or strain. And how do we apply the stress strain? We can use our fingertip. If we make this transistor as an array, not just one, you make 8,000 of them across, and you apply the fingertip, press them from the top, you apply a stress, and the stress produce a piezoelectric charge in the material, and they control the current flow through it. And this is the basic mechanism of the textile imaging reported in this paper. So basically, you can directly convert the mechanical force applied from your fingertip to an electric signal.
Wow. So you would have to have the microarray on your finger or on the equipment, correct? You know, where it's, so you can put the stress of the finger on it.
The microarrays is an array of device below that, and your finger is just a provide a mechanical press on top of the devices.
Got it.
And
at
top devices, and it simulate like our fingers touch things. How do we know we touch things? Because at inside our fingers we have nerves, you know,
mm-hmm.
nerves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This device serves as the nerve for the finger. So when you touch it, that nerve of the device, that device feels the pressure and use electric signal, give you an indication. Yes, there's a pressure applied for this. And we made this one very sensitive, also high resolution. It can simulate our finger touch.
Excellent.
So called smart skin.
Now, with that type of... do you call it a device or material?
Device.
Device. That would just fit over your finger?
We make it into a flat sheet. You know.
Oh, okay, flat sheet. Okay, that's
flat
that's
sheet.
What I'm,
can be completely transparent.
I'm trying to picture it in my mind, and I'm going, what?
Yeah, it's a sheet, not inside the finger, but just, let's say, just like a piece of paper put on the table, use your finger to press it.
Yeah,
then record
okay.
it. All the things from your fingers, and you can record the local pressure you applied, the finger, your fingerprints at a very high resolution, and in the future we also hope to record immediately the local temperature and other effects from multi-dimensional detection from one mechanical action.
Mm. And would these sheets be like what they call thin films or any of those type sheets? Or
this sheet
having a polymer base, that's what I'm thinking in my mind.
It is a fully transparent polymer. So in your hands, in my office, I have one in my hands right now, and you can see through it. They have a 95% transmission coefficient for through it. So you basically put it on your skin, you won't tell.
Like tape, yeah.
But inside that, there's 8,000 of array of piezoelectric transistors.
Wow.
Fully transparent, foldable, flexible, so you can fold it. This is different from silicon transistor, because silicon transistor, you cannot see through it.
Yeah, it can be opaque, yeah.
Yeah, can be okay.
Yeah.
So this one is, and also flexible because use the substrate is polymer based, so you can attach it anywhere you like.
going to have many uses that will.
Yeah, so this provides a direct way of convert a fingertip touch mechanical action into electronic signal, then being recorded and processed.
Yeah. Now, when they record and process, does that use like wireless technology, since this is so advanced, this type of technology, to collect the data, or is there a chip on the little thin film?
It's another at the side of the device is a little silicon chip, and the silicon chip pick up the signal and record it. So that's it that we call the integration of this piezoelectronic device with silicon technology.
Yeah. So then, when you have this film with the little silicone chip on it that's recording the data, or you know, the collection of what you're trying to measure. Do you take that and take it like to a reader, like you do in the grocery store, where they read, you know, with the laser, what your vegetables are?
No. This is read it automatically, self. Well, not like a scanner you have to use other things to scan. No, this is things directly take the signal and put it in a processor and process it for that. Will not need another scanner to do that.
Oh, amazing. And you'd need, too, from this, not only I can see advancements in software engineering and everything to take these types of materials that, you know, you've and your students have developed, and then the software to make that all happen for those silicone chips to be read later on.
Yeah. So this one is need a multidisciplinary team. We need a student's team who know chemistry, physics, engineering, fabrication, also measurements. So that's why I say we need a multidisciplinary research team to do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And more importantly, this is a major advance in nanotechnology, because in nanotechnology development, I personally view is that has three stages. The first stage is nanomaterials. People fabricate nanomaterials. The second one, they measure the properties, measure the electrical, thermal, mechanical properties by various ways. The third stage is make a single devices. And the fourth stage is make array of devices. And the last stage is system integration to make something like a product people can use.
Mm-hmm.
From a single device, most of the group do single device. We do this array of devices, and this is a milestone advance in the field. So we can a big step towards practical application.
Right, and you just did this in less than a year, making this advancement.
Yeah, we work very hard on that, and so that's I personally feel very happy about the outcome, and so this can be. One day we can use it, and so it's a milestone development in nanotechnology overall, from
right.
single
and,
device to array of devices.
And for the audience that is listening to the show with Dr. Wang and myself, this paper that we're talking about is called Tactile Addressable Matrix of Vertical Nanowire Piezotronic Transistors for Active/Adaptive Tactile Imaging, and it's attached to the show for the promo, the overview of what the topic of our show is about. There's a number of papers that you've authored, and all of us have collected and put for the show, so I think it's very good. So, audience, do look at that paper and learn more about it, because we're hearing history being made and how it's going into the field of the application into the public sector in the future.
Yeah, this our first time coined the word piezoelectronic was in the around Thanksgiving time 2006.
Wow.
Coined the word. Last 6 years we developed this one. Step by step, establish the effects, fabricate the devices, measure it, and explore a variety of things. But you know what? Last year, I even wrote a book on that.
Oh, you did? Excellent.
I wrote a book. Yeah, the book is called Piezoelectronics and Piezophototronics. It was published by Springer And from the first time I phrased the title, the word, 2006 to last year, I wrote a book to introduce the basic ideas, basic theory, so the students can read it, can learn from it. And to now we make it into an array of devices. So I feel that is a formation of a new field and an advance of the technology to make it something really you can see the future of this from a scientific concept to technology advances.
Right, and what is such a pleasure? I know when you created that word piezoelectronic materials, to see it in a book, to see it in a dictionary, it's making history with the world. So it's very nice and wonderful that you're here on these shows with us, so that we now have 167 countries that listen to your words, Dr. Wang, on nanotechnology. So it's all wonderful in educating the public on these. They're hard engineering and science topics, but at the same time, it's making the awareness there.
Yeah, the when I first came out this phrase, the word, people look suspicious. What is this? They even reject it, reject the first place. They don't believe it. And but I persistently work on that and make it aware and accepted by the scientific community. So I think what's the importance for as a scientist? Number one, you have to be looking for new things. You have to be open-minded and creative. Number two, once you have a creative idea, you have to realize that experimentally, more important, you have to be persistent. You have to be step-by-step persistently to do good work, many good work collections together, and then get the scientific community to recognize, accept the effect, and then the general public will accept later. So in their case, I think persistency and consistency are the most important characteristic as a scientist.
Right. It sure is. It's elegantly
sometimes,
put, too.
Sometimes we call stubborn.
That runs in a lot of us. Because we see it, and sometimes the world doesn't see it, and then the world says, "Oh yes, I remember hearing that or seeing it years later."
It takes a lot of effort to do that, but this is very good for young students because they want to get famous quickly and fast, right? But well, everything takes time, and if you want to do something that was not existed before, people never heard about before that, take a while for them to get used to the terminology, then get them to understand what's behind the terminology, and thirdly, they start to apply for their own research. So that's major, the major steps. And I have one thing to share with you. I had the pleasure to visit the Nobel Museum in Stockholm last year.
Uh-huh.
I remember there was one banner have a famous quotation, and it says any major scientific truth goes three stages. The first stage, people says, it is impossible. It conflicts with the Bible, so they simply don't believe it. Then, after you prove it as possible, the second stage, they say, well, there's nothing new. People done this 20 years ago. That's the second stage. Then you continue work on that until everybody recognizes that and is well-received. Then say, well, I knew you were right at the very beginning.
Right.
So I use this kind of three general guidance from the museum to encourage my students. Well, sometimes you have to be persistent, believe yourself, confidence in yourself, and regard what the other says is what's important is what you think about you. It's not other things about you.
Right. It is so true. So true. So remember that, audience, and if you're in school, university or high school or any school that you're learning science, even in third grade and sixth grade, definitely keep those truths of science in your heart so that you can prove it right for the future.
Yeah, it basically that. So that's why you need to take many years' effort to prove you are right. And then if you give up in the middle of the way, that's the end of it.
Right, it's the end of it because no one will put the energy that you were putting into it and that drive, that stubbornness.
That's right. And you have to be stubborn sometimes to just keep going, and I believe this. I think I'm right. I think I believe I'm right. And this kind of confidence you have to have.
Yeah, you have to have, and it's true. Once you have that inner confidence within yourself, you can make anything happen. And sometimes it's hard because that inner confidence is that energy is going against the world or peers because they don't understand it yet.
Exactly.
But once you make that one out there, you'll get it there because Dr. Wang and I are looking out there and listening, so we can at least write you a letter and say of confidence that we agree with you. Right, Dr. Wang?
Yes, absolutely, because I think the important thing is acquire more data. Data speak for you.
Yes, it does. It does.
Yeah.
It,
so that's why you have to persistently acquire more data, more results, study more and more in depth, theoretically, experimentally, all this. Eventually, it is the data that speak for you.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. Now, with the paper that we were talking about, you know, in the paper, you use single graphene nanotubes and also with zinc. In the future, will it involve other types of metals or anything, or is it just isolated to primarily zinc at this time? Because you're also an editor in a lot of journals for nano, you know, where you see the technical papers before any of us see it.
Yeah, this material system is very broad. It's not only just one type of materials. We use one type of material for reasons very simple. Number one, it is easy to fabricate. Number two, it is cheap, and that's what we use it. But in the principle laid down by this is general. And if you look at the periodic table, we can look at compound semiconductor like gallium nitride, indium nitride, cadmium sulfide, zinc oxide, all this. There's dozens of materials work for in the same principle. So basically, the fundamental principle is the same. Materials, some have better performance, some have a little poorer performance, but they should have something in common.
Right, because I know in other literature where they're taking like the nanoparticles, and I know in the future they'll be doing the piezoelectrical materials with the nanowires, that they're looking at specific viruses that could be associated with different tumors so that they can, I think they're trying to find now in science or in medicine of what is really initiating the tumor, what type of exposure, possibly chemical, et cetera. Over time, I think we're going to have a lot of answers to this, not only in physical but also in medical, meaning I could see as a monitoring tool for the environment too.
Yeah, that's absolute,
yeah.
Because the material system broad, we can have a lot of things beyond that.
Right, and we're going to pick up, audience, as we take a little station break and come back to the second hour with Dr. Zhang Wang.
Okay, we continue.
Okay. Welcome back, audience, to our second hour of One Cell, One Light radio show with our special topic, Updates in Nanotechnology, with Dr. Zong Wang. And Dr. Wang, I'm still reviewing the paper that we just referenced on the first hour. I have a sort of a technical question from my end. When you have the nanotubes and they've got the different coatings with the different polymers, as you stated, for the piezoelectrical that's got the cation, the anion, the different charge, positive and negative charges. When they're doing the coatings, as you told us in other shows, the polymers basically stay the same characteristics. The metals can change physical characteristics. Have you observed, or part because it's hard to find a dictionary with these types of things in it, that is the degradation of those polymers the same as regular polymers? You know, like one is you could have polyethylene as in a milk container, you know, like a milk bottle, and but using it as the thin film because it's smaller. Would our body break it down faster and make smaller than because of just the acids and the way the body decomposes stuff versus like a milk container?
Right. This is a good question. This is a good question because when you have this kind of polymer make very thin films, that several things can change. Number one is the mechanical robustness change. You know, when you have a polymer film, if you fling it back and forth, it can easily break into pieces. But when you make it very thin, they are very tough. They become more tough. Just like give you an example, like a silicon wafer. You know, silicon wafer is very fragile, right?
Right, right. I remember early electronics, yes.
But if you thin the silicon wafer to 50 to 100 micron, to the hair width, a silicon wafer can be folded over.
Wow.
You can fold off one from the other end to this end, 180 degrees,
so,
and without breaking.
Wow.
So that's called the same thing applies for polymer films. When you have a milk bottle, you know, that's thick film, but when you have a thin film, they can conform any surface they can. And also, the mechanical robustness increases. And so in that regard, I think mechanical property change dramatically.
Right, because I imagine because it's not breaking, you could fold it over, the, like you gave the example of the silicon wafer, the tensile strength of the polymer, possibly, as it gets smaller, you know, in size, it gets stronger.
Yeah, it is making much more flexible. And let me give you another example. This is a measurement of these results. You know, we work on a zinc oxide for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very routine material. It's, but this material itself, when you make bulk, it's a crystal. When you, if you drop it to the floor, it breaks into pieces because very fragile.
Right.
Just like any ceramics. But when you make this nano film, nano wires, it becomes so tough. How tough? We use measurements. Flink this film, nanowires, for 35 billion cycle. 35 billion cycle. It did not show any fatigue behavior.
Okay, when you mentioned 35
billion
cycles, meaning like you're spinning it around, or
you just flink it back and forth 35 billion times.
Yeah, like bouncing it back and forth like a ping pong, you know, going back
exactly,
and forth
exactly,
or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Wow, and no fatigue or anything on the materials.
No,
and that audience, that's just a general term in industry, that it's no wear and tear. It's still maintaining its shape. It didn't have any degradation. In that state of what that material was.
So this will give you an indication that when you make the nano, the mechanical property enhances dramatically.
Right. It's be highly durable. That's why in certain commercials when they use those micro beads, not beads, but little, I don't know, it's not even a sensor or anything. It's just the way they use it, using probably this thin film, so that you can keep the, if you put the rinse in your laundry, you can smell it for 14 days out of the drawer. You know, yeah. So it just lasts long that way. Now, wow, that's important. Now, with each one of these, and I wasn't, you and I know we're not joking when we call it nano cupcakes, nano chocolate nut crustals. These are terms that has been used because it makes a shape like a cupcake or any of that, which is, if you can imagine, you know, if you have a cupcake, it's in one of those, I'm going to say cupcake holder, you know, the paper holder when someone's making cupcakes, and those ridges around it, that's what a nano cupcake looks like. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Wang. And then it's layered, sometimes four of those cupcakes on top of each other, versus in other technology, I used to call it like a roll of coins on top of each other. So those would be definitely two different types of advanced materials in structure, correct or wrong?
Yeah, two different types of materials. People use the cute name, you know.
Right, a cute name that you know, get your attention.
Yeah, these cupcakes, you can immediately know the shape, but the inside the cupcake is made of these specific materials, even with specific orientations. You know, the one you referred to is that they grow this carbon nanotube into arrays.
Right, right.
They make so very densely arrays. But the overall shape of the whole thing look like a cupcake. But they make this shape for the forest. And what they find, this is really interesting, is that they can absorb anything, absorb all the wave. Well, they say, well, absorb, you know, a dark color is absorb all the lights. But mostly visible light that has a wavelength of a few hundred nanometers size, they absorb those wavelengths. But sometimes they don't absorb UV light. UV have a wavelength of around 200 to 400 nanometer. Or sometimes it does not absorb infrared light. Infrared have a wavelength to micron range. There'd be a thousands of nanometer in that range. So, but they find this cupcake have extraordinary characteristics that absorb even terahertz wave.
Right.
What's terahertz? We know this is a scientific term. Is the electromagnetic wave with the wavelength of around a sub millimeter. That means like 0.1 millimeter. This kind of wavelength range, and even they can absorb this kind of wavelength, making them a very good terahertz detector.
Right.
Detector. And, you know, terahertz wave have a high penetration. If you have this ship, you know, the cargo ship, you know, this what's inside. You don't have to open the box. They can use a terahertz wave to see through it.
Yeah, and because in many, like, just using that example of a ship, if that material is, you know, I'm going to say on the box or on the inside of the container, that can measure through then lead, could it, or not?
Yes, can, because X-ray cannot penetrate through lead, but this can.
Mm-hmm.
This wave can penetrate through lead. Because the wavelength is different and the characteristics are different. Yeah, X-ray have a wavelength of to a sub-nanometer. That means a sub-nanometer range. That's the X-ray wavelength.
Right. Because that's also in that technology of terahertz that's been made major advances, too. At the same time you were doing the nano battery, a lot of advancements have come that way.
Yeah.
And that,
so they,
now,
they,
go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah. They have this high penetration for medical purposes, for security purposes, for many other things. It really have a lot of industrial applications with this technology.
Right, because even, I'm just using this as an example, like you, when you said the cargo ship, that if, I'm going to say a company had their own, I'm going to say the piezoelectrical that is connected for the their particular terahertz signal, or, you know, in that range, they the company could put their, meaning whatever, you know, whatever that cargo was, put it in there, and then they could also know that if it was just changed or anything, if anyone broke into it too, not only just detecting what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. If somebody broke in, or is this a shipped product, is supposed to be the product. Or
right,
anything,
contained, yes.
If you have a cargo ship that inside is any kind of other metal pieces or other dangerous species hidden inside the box, they can use this terahertz wave to probe that.
Yeah, because the other waves don't go through the lead, and for our audience to know that that's a whole other form of technology now. Now, and also with you mentioning, you know, like 0.1 millimeter or did you said millimeter, right, or micron?
Millimeter, yeah, sub millimeter, yeah, millimeter.
Millimeter. That's a whole other arena. The thing with the penetration too. There would be a lot of other types of materials, like, because with that type of technology, you could use a handheld sensor, or you could even possibly connect it to a satellite or other things. If you were watching, you know, meaning you were the cargo and watching what your cargo load had versus just the ship management, couldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. This is you can use a handheld device to see through. You can do a scan through this inside the box and probe inside what it is. So this is really become. I think there was a research in this one for some years, but now it's become really some application come to
right.
to play, because these have much less radiation damage.
Right, right, right. Now,
like X-ray, we have a lot of radiation damage, particularly for biological application.
Right, because even look at Madame Curie, who you probably saw the awards of all of the Nobel laureates when you went to tour the Nobel Prize Museum, that, you know, she died, even though they found her and her husband uranium, you know, she died from the effects of, you know, got the cancer, et cetera, which we know is from radiation poisoning over time. But the thing is that it can be damaging. That's why you wear the lead guard apron when you go to the dentist and when you're getting X-rays and that. So.
Yeah, there's Mrs. Curie, and she was to have this because the radiation from this radiation, and because that's early there from she purified this radioactive materials. But that time, scientists don't know.
Yeah, they didn't have any health and safety, and it's the same thing what happened with the uranium dye. You know, they used that, and the ladies that were hired to paint that dye uranium paint on watches, you know, like clocks and that, so it would glow in the dark. Turn around, they ended up with cancer and that, but because they touched the paintbrush with their tongue.
Yeah. So I was in a visit to France last year. I had a fortune to stand in front of this Mrs. Curie's lab. And
oh, my.
A little a podium, then she received the reporters, and I was fortunate to have to stand over there. Even they tell me now that nobody allowed to go into her lab because they still have radioactive materials being detected. So you can see from outside, but not from inside.
Right, right. But, because you could stomp in there, it could be on the floor, everywhere, and then you'd take it home with you.
It was contaminated that time.
Yeah. Now, with the tactile response, you know, using the piezoelectrical zinc oxide nanowires, with any of that, like as we discussed with the cupcakes and that, with the tactile response, not only in gathering the energy, I feel that there also be, like in robotics, use of robots or androids, which some of the larger businesses are looking into as having help within a home to do manual tasks. This would also be part of them even feeling temperature and everything if they were able to be used to cook or to run a bath water or anything like that.
Definitely can do that. We have other things built in addition to this one. We have this this material we use also have the so-called power electric effect. And if a robot, the finger from a robot touch a hot plate, and then this transistor we fabricated will have different electronic signal. They can sense the temperature as well. So basically make the finger function like a human finger. And you can sense the roughness of surfaces, the temperature of the surfaces, and as well as is there any kind of other characteristic of the surfaces. So make it truly a biologic inspired robots.
Right, right. That interface between metal and real. You know what I mean, the human body, just
yeah.
Like you said before. The other thing is possibly because there was other inventions of artificial skin that did not go into the sensory as you did, but your invention with your colleagues takes it to the next level of using it. And I could even see how this type of skin could be used to even testing chemicals or testing other types of components so that you didn't have to use it with animals or humans or however they are now testing it, you know, even cloning skin to test, you know, when they're doing chemical reagents and stuff. Do you envision that type of application?
It could because this is because we can use the surfaces that they are sensitive to different chemicals or different chemical substances, and to bring this effect into those kind of applications. So far we have not done that yet, but we
right.
vision
right.
it should be possible.
Yeah, that's mainly my question was: is it God bless? Is it possible? And also, I purposely asked you to the chocolate nut clusters. Again, audience, that's a term, but it's when you have the metals and the polymers, and it's in a design. Is that correct? And it has a specific function. But is it layered? That type of material. Are you okay? Layered like the silicon wafer, where there's several layers on it, or is it just like a cluster of those units?
Two ways. One way is that it's just a composite. It's a metal particles composite with those kind of polymers. We use that sometimes for different purposes as well. But sometimes you can make layers. Layer means that you have a structure design. You have a chemical gradient for different purposes, sometimes for thermal purposes, sometimes for piezoelectric purposes, so you can have some design for that. So with this one, we call hierarchically designed materials. That means ordering at a different length scale. At a lower scale, we have an ordering. At a higher scale, we have another ordering, and they call hierarchically structure.
Wow. Now, with the nano nut clusters, because they can also be used to enhance X-ray, you know, vision and those types of equipment, do they still use like the zinc wires or other metals, or are these more of the terms where we've heard in the past when we talked about gold nanowires, where you explained to the audience that they're red? Is it more of those types of metals?
Well, gold, there are different purposes. For the purpose we are talking about, we mostly use the zinc oxide, those kind of materials. Gold particles are very useful for recently for this kind of plasmonics, this imaging, for this cancer imaging as well, because gold is a good material. It is very inert, you know, it has much less biological side effect. So they use this one for various purposes, such as sometimes functionalized surface for drug delivery or for bioimaging. So this is, in that case, they use gold. Do not use very much of zinc oxide based.
Mm-hmm. More, you know, I'm going to call it the precious metal that way. Now, with there is also a term before we move on to the other where. In the literature, and we have it attached here, for drug delivery system like in anti-cancer drugs, et cetera, they use the term cargo ships, nanometer-sized cargo ships that can be used, by taking a pill or, possibly in being injected, with the medication or however they're doing the cancer treatment for the, I'm going to call it the anti-cancer drugs. But when it's a cargo ship, that term with nano cargo ship, that is layered, meaning it's where one medication is attached to the material, the nanomaterial, and then it's delivered to wherever it's supposed to go in the body and then have an affinity, and then the other units of it delivered. Is that true, or am I explaining the technology wrong?
Yeah, you are correct. The basic thing is to make this little nano particle into a shell, an empty shell. And inside the shell, you can inject, this can be contained in the drug to be released. And then on the surface of the shell, you functionalize this with different groups so that it can use various chemical or magnetic means to drive this particle to migrate inside the body towards the site at which the cancer cell is growing. So it's called targeted drug delivery. So once that this reach there and the drug through other process they released, this is like a cargo ship. They ship the drug to the site and release it. So in that case, they use this shell type of particles so you can contain the drug.
Right. In the now, in just using it for comparison in size, one of those shells would be, Dr. Wang, approximately how big in nano, like you explained with the human hair, from 50 to 100 nanometers?
Yeah. This is the typical size, I would say about 500 nanometer. The shell size, the shell thickness about 10 to 50 nanometer, but the entire size about 500 nanometer is half micron. Half micron is what? Is a hundredth of a hair width.
So it's very small audience.
And, normally we cannot see with our naked eye. We cannot see that, but we have to use see in visual ones. We cannot see that. We have to use a microscope to magnify that hundreds of thousands of times before we see that.
Yeah. Now, when you have this type, which is in medications or anything, audience, these types of materials that are used are designed so that your immune system doesn't respond to it, so it can deliver the medication to the cancer cells. Because if the immune system was able to respond and detect it, they would probably clump it together, and those eosinophils and white blood cells would be coming right out there to attack it.
That's a very important point, because the immune system, if the immune system reject the particle, there's no way you can deliver the drug to there. So they have to choose the material that the immune system accept that one, and also in the right size and the right characteristic in order for the drug delivery.
Right, because I've seen it in my career where people get exposed to different chemicals, like with the phthalates. Years ago, they were using phthalates in like finishing of clothing, you know, like if you were making slacks or clothes or anything, and it was a finish that would just make it look good, you know, and it, back then you had a lot of formaldehyde in the clothing coming off, et cetera. And certain individuals that would breathe those vapors, approximately 3 weeks later in the industry, they would get a nosebleed because they had a sensitization to the phthalates because phthalic anhydride had a trimalitic anhydride, rather, had a very unique characteristic that you only had it be exposed, and if you were sensitive to it because small capillaries in your nasal area, that you would have a nosebleed 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
But it
right.
was very odd. So that's audience, how you track different chemicals to figure out what you were exposed to when you're in the field that way. But with all this nano, it might be a little hard because they've been designed not to, to detect, you know, when they're used for medications. And we're not talking pecans and caramel, are we, Dr. Wang?
No, when we are talking about this, it's called biosafety. And a lot of study being carried out for the toxicity and biological compatibility of nanomaterials. And, you know, people study carbon nanotube a lot, but they find there's a lot of risk for biological applications.
Right,
and,
right.
And I noticed there was from FDA or some kind of documentation shows that if you use this carbon nanotube for some specific applications, you have to get you have the risk of for this side effect for biological system for that. So the recent study for some document shows that it is really sometimes have the side effect. But you know, any material have side effect.
Correct.
Just have to use the right amount.
Right amount, the allocation, and the right engineering controls or protection, you know, for it back then, and even now. And that's all being developed as we progress in these fields and the integration of these fields into the different disciplines. Now,
yeah.
With the, from the, the sensing or the use of these materials, what do you, you know, you identified for our audience, and I appreciate it greatly, the three aspects, you know, of nanotechnology and how it's grown from the battery to all the way to the artificial skin and its sensitivity with the tactile response, meaning the sensing in that. Do you see... what new developments do you see? Because, as I said, you're an editor on several journals in nanotechnologies and photonics, that you see the papers coming before they're published yet.
Right. There's a number of ways of the major stream of research going on. I think in the nano area, I can give you as the following major directions.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that would be great. That would be great for the audience, especially our young scientist.
Yeah, the first, of course, is people are very interested in the future energies, you know, the clean, green, sustainable energy sources. People work on these nanomaterials, nanotechnology for solar cell, thermoelectric, piezoelectric, mechanical energy conversions, various of this approach. So energy is a big thing. So there's a big trend called research on nano energy. When I first called nano energy, people said, "What it is? Oh, why call nano energy? Does it mean really nano energy?" Well, nano energy does not mean nano energy. It means the energy that utilize nanomaterials with high efficiency, high conversion efficiency, storage density, etc. So nanomaterial, nanotechnology resulted. High-performance energy technology. That's what it means. And then the energy is one. The second one, I think the people are developing, just like you described, that for biological application, for drug delivery, for biosensing, for medical application, this is another big drive of research. And the third one is the most recent one that people are very interested for environmental impact, our protection of our water quality, natural resources using this nanotechnology. So that's another kind of big trend. And from the industrial application point of view, sensor technology has become, you know, this is the Internet of Things, and the sensor network is become a big thing. You know, like we have a cell phone, we want to build everything in our cell phone. We want to have a health monitor, we have to have a toxic gas detector, we want to have UV sensors, everything built in a cell phone. So that means what we have a sensor technology is rising up in such that nanomaterials, nanotechnology are playing a very important role for those ones. And further research, people involve interfacing nano with biology. You know, how when you have nanomaterials in the biology system, how does the biology system react to this? This is number one. Number two, further from research point of view, how do we use nanotechnology to study signals or to be transducted by nerve systems? You know, use nanotechnology to probe biology in a cellular level, in an organ, all these kind of things. There's a lot of things being studied for that. So I think that furthermore, people are working on electronics, photonics,
right.
You know, electronics that they want to always make a computer faster, better, smaller. And that's another trend. The other trend is that photonics, people want to say, can we improve the resolution for optical imaging? Can we do deep tissue imaging? Can we probe something that optically we were unable to do before, break the resolution limit? And those are the things being attract a lot of attention now. So I think overall, there's a tremendous amount of research. But at the end, I think what's important is that application. We have to bring something to society. It is only nano that can solve the world, some of the world urgent big problems. That's what I always think. If we do something, what we can bring to the society? Let's say 5 years later, what we can major technology can come out of this. So always keep thinking about this one, and then anything what we do, we have an application in mind.
Right, because it's growing so fast, and it's interfacing with society globally now. I know you're involved with the university and Georgia Institute of
Georgia Institute of Technology.
Yeah, of technology. Because I always hesitate because I always miss up the name for some reason.
Georgia.
I want to call it Georgia
technology.
Tech. Yeah.
Georgia Tech is a short term. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, so I know you're involved with China. You know, at the different institutes that are there now, they're starting in India, Thailand, Malaysia. There's like not only our American universities and that, but a whole exchange of work that is being done in not only creating the technology, but also the interface of not only just journals peer review, but also international like institutes of how they're reviewing the technology of how it could be implemented into the public. Have you seen advancements in that since we've last talked, or more aware of multiple layer interface that way?
It's a big trend. It's called globalization. You know, like economy, it's not a regional economy anymore. Education is the same thing. Education and research is the same thing. This is the development of the World Wide Web, make the whole universe like a whole earth like a village.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
what happened at the other side of the world, you know, in 5 seconds. So it's globalization. I personally believe that today's that it's changed the whole system. I think we have more people in the science and more equipment being built around the globe for various things, and plus the investment put in by other countries, and make the research really diverse and multinational as well international. So I think this is a big change we are facing in our education program.
Right, right, because it's the new IPOs or any of the companies that are coming out where they've partnered, you know, originally as like incubator with the universities, and that now they're going into production, they're going into the next phases of companies or the acquisition and that, and it's a lot going on in just that world, you know, of alternative investment, I don't know what they call it, alternative energies or alternative, I think that's the category, because they're looking at green technologies that they can, you know, put and offer, as I call it, over the stock market in the future or when it's ready to be developed that way.
That's correct. That's all because this is everything we need to consider, the economic benefit, but more important, we also need to consider environmental impact. And So I travel to various countries in the world. Some countries get heavy pollutions because they over-developed, because fast development result a lot of the environmental consequences.
Correct,
and,
correct.
And now they need to take a lot of money and time to clean up. So people learn from this. This is a very unfortunate situation. They have
mm-hmm.
to learn from it. But at the very beginning, they didn't realize that. But until the time they realize, it's too late.
Right. And basically, it comes back down to just cleaning up after yourself, you know, whether it's industry or yourself, and then it can be nice and clean. The other thing is that with not only these new developments and the globalization, I even had a client call me as far as Panama and bring to my attention, because I knew about it because it was developed in Korea years ago, like the nano, where you just spray it so that you get better reception. You know, like if you're in, like you just said, those remote areas, you just can spray it on a on a wall, or spray it in your area, the solution, and it has nano in it. So, but it amplifies the signal so that you can run your computer. You can not just have electricity, but you get better reception, like on the cell phone and stuff like that. So, it's very portable now, a lot of this technology too, in certain countries that are pioneering in other disciplines too.
Yeah,
you know, in nano.
That these I read the article published in Scientific American. They said, what are the major ideas that change the world? Well, have several characteristics. Number one, miniaturization. You know, this is like the computer, from vacuum tube computers to solid state computers, from
mm-hmm.
mainframe computer to desktop to cell phone. Right? This is miniaturization. And the second thing is that portability. Right? And
right.
These days, we cannot live without a cell phone. And I was participating my daughter's graduate commencement just a few days ago.
Uh-huh.
And there were thousands of people. I can't find her, but, well, just call her, and she asked, and we 5 minutes later, we find her. Imagine if we don't have this wireless...
Yeah, you'd be still looking for it until you call, that other service.
There was probably, I would say, 10,000 people in the stadium at least.
Wow.
And parents over there. So you see, this is portable electronics. And then I watched the kids and down the platform. There was probably 2,000 students graduated. Each have a cell phone. And some are texting. Some are calling. This has become so important. So I see everybody uses it for communicating. So the portable electronic become important. Lastly is functionality. We have to make those devices multifunctional, do a lot of things with one device, then you can live more healthier, higher quality of life from there. So I think we will want to contribute more to the functionality.
Right. So it can function in different areas. Now, with the with these functions, or even the miniaturization of that, because I know a lot of the architecture of Nano was based on the design of nature, you know, whether it's a plant or silk or any of that. Because years ago, what do you call it, the silk from like spider webs and that, they were very strong, you know, in strength and holding in that. Now, are you seeing more of the interface of natural fibers or materials into the nanocomposite world?
This is what the nature can make is still the very best one. Like this, you know, the spider web. This polymer is room temperature organic synthesis, right?
Right.
And they become so strong, so tough, and the elasticity is huge, right? You know,
right.
This spider from the ceiling come down, the elasticity is huge. And this, the mechanical property is so large. So scientists today still unable to reproduce those kind of things.
Right, in that nature, in that. I know there's many designs that they're, you know, doing and studying and developing and coming up with technology. Because even now they use, and we have an article attached there, where they were using a silk-based edible, you know, food sensor to test, you know, microorganisms, et cetera. But at the same time, it was the interface of different technologies that way. Now, with any of this for the sensing, have you seen from the papers that you've read or anything how they're, well, using it like for microorganisms detection? You know, we all work in eat meat or have eaten meat sometime in our life, or other vegetables or anything. Are they using this now in coatings or anything that are edible, so that they can detect bacteria or detect, you know, that it's bad meat or it's old or anything? Do you know?
This is a big project. Also, it's critically important, particularly in some other countries, and that food safety become a really concern, because when you get a piece of meat, you never know when was this, is this fresh, or when was, is there any chemical added for that? You know, there's a lot of chemical adding for that, and for food safety is a big thing now. So I read the article sent to me, use this sucrose as base for that, and that have very interesting implication for quality, food quality control, and safety inspection, those kind of things. So
right.
I think this kind of is a big society problem for drug safety, food safety.
Yes.
You know, it's that's what we use every day.
Right, right. It's every day of life, and but it's developing into, even like if you went into meat packing or you know, making, look what happened with the fungus that occurred in the peanut butter a number of years ago. I think it's about 5 years ago or 6 years ago. It affected, because they couldn't clean it up or anything, it affected the whole business and they ended up going bankrupt. But with different technologies now, you can possibly see a color change or anything, that you can clean up the machines better or that, so you don't have to have a aflatoxin, you know, fungus in growing in your peanut butter or anything that way, you know, that you're producing to go to the public, you know, the consumer.
This is the detection. I think the even some kind of food, they have artificial flavor added on. You never know. It is good or bad, but I want to say one thing, is not against something, but I want to say this one. You know, the instant noodle, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sometimes we work very late and want to have an instant noodle for that. That thing is not good for health. And I have a few cases of people I know, they eat this kind of instant noodle because they add these preservatives. Okay,
mm-hmm. Right.
If you eat it for a long time, they develop stomach cancers. And I know a few cases of among my friends that had happened before.
Mm-hmm.
So this is food additive to that. And, well, if you take a few times, no problem. But if you take it very frequently, you have to be really extra careful and for health concern for that. So I
right.
think this is kind of artificial added flavor or chemicals. You know, any chemicals, I think, have some kind of side effect. Sometimes we just
Correct.
Don't realize that
right.
until very late. And also with recently the this kind of bacterial virus contamination for the food, you know, there's sometimes some from the this kind of chicken-associated or pig-associated virus. You know, this has become seasonally sometimes become a really big problem for that. I think
right.
We have to be really careful about that.
Right, we do. And that's true. Many of the artificial flavors are made out of toxic substances that is edible, not edible as being healthy, but is allowed to be in it because it's at a level that's less than the additive ingredient or that, or say less than one. And it can bioaccumulate, like you shared with the audience, in long-term usage, you know, of
right.
of anything. And especially, like, people don't realize sometimes, you know, like if one person was, I'm going to say, a chronic alcohol user or exposed to alcohol, the alcohol alone, it takes out vitamin B1, you become deficient, but no one's looking at that, and then you end up with stomach cancers or that. So some of these additives that are in there, excuse me, not additives, but the artificial flavors are made of chemicals that make alcohols, and then over a long period of time, you lose your vitamin B1, and then diseases such as stomach cancer or anything is initiated that way. So it's it happens, you know, that way.
It's basically that anything, if we overuse it, it's
correct.
Anything side effect, just be don't over. So it's a general guideline. The just like we go to a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
All the great taste stuff. The
taste yeah, I know.
They are all the healthy.
Right, right. And if you
the
keep on doing it,
tested lousy.
Yeah, yeah, that's
so
true.
If something
that's true.
Not very good. Must be healthy.
Yeah, yeah. That is 100% right, and it's like you said, Dr. Wang, everything in moderation, and you'll end up with the best results sometimes that way.
Yeah. And I remember the when I first came to U.S., I visited the zoo, the Phoenix Zoo. This was years ago. I remember that the first time I see the chicken grow so fast, the first week, second week, third week, fifth week, maybe by 6 weeks, ready for a big chicken. And I was wondering, wow, how grow this fast? Because when I was grow up, the chicken takes a couple years to grow. and you know, this use artificial this stimulant, you know?
Yeah, the hormones and everything to grow, yes. Well, growth factors, yes.
You can stimulate chicken, you can stimulate human too.
Yeah, that's the truth. That's how with the chicken stimulation of chicken and that, because I'll give you an example, like that was a main diet in the Caribbean, and I was involved years ago with a study in Puerto Rico where young children, 3 years old females, were developing breast and going through adolescence at
wow.
an early thing because of the hormones that were used in the chickens, because that was in their main diet, you know, rice and chicken and beans. And so that accumulated, and that's what triggered that. You know, so it is very important when you see that chicken growing so fast. And that very excellent point, excellent point. Now,
I have a
go ahead.
I have a general question in my mind. This can be a question for anyone that we have ever think about this. I say, okay, look at our society development in the last several thousand years. The energy resources available, the environmental we have, the fast industrial development, the information technology, the biotechnology. The question is, when our life reached the very best for the humankind? What do I mean? Okay, I mean that after that period of time, the energy crisis maybe lower our quality of life. Has anybody done a simulation or a study? Say, okay, are we reached the very best life of humankind now, or how many years do we have to go? This is an interesting question for that. Say, well, consider all the facts. Consider energy, environmental, food quality, industry development. All these things, in fact, is have we reached our the best we can do, or is
That's true. Meaning that would be a very good study to compare it. I know I have several individuals that come into my office and they say, you know, I used to, you know, from the 40s to the 50s to the 60s, but I really liked the 60s. It was softer, or 50s was romantic, you know. So, meaning in that timeline of society and what technologies were developed, like at the end of the 50s was when we had the transistor radio made. So it was great to take to the beach and use it in the beach, so it was convenient, you know. But as more technology comes out, as I call it more gizmos, certain groups, and that it just gets overwhelming for it. It's like the lady that I showed the nano to with the brochure as we entered in to the show today, it just overwhelmed her that this whole aspect, you know, she missed in her life, didn't even know it was going on, you know. So that would be a wonderful study to see the developments that way, because it would be interesting to see the results of it. But I have a feeling, Dr. Wang, we're living the results of it and seeing that
we'll
interface.
We'll make it better.
But as we're coming up to the hour, I know you're involved with several journals. You mentioned the two books. If you would, I'd appreciate if you'd mention the two books that you wrote, so that we don't have those links to this particular show, but I'll have our program director get those links to the show, so that the audience, if they want to purchase those books by Springer, they can do that and read more about it. I know I'm going to do that, so I'll know how to make it. I'm your extension student. Okay.
Wow. Yeah. I think the just send the information to the public is very important, and you are serve as a mentoring for the society in this regard. I think it's the society people, the general citizens, should be thank you for your outstanding work.
Thank you.
To the end, most important I want to say is that what's our goal? Our goal is to make our future quality of life better, and also save the world in energy, and also improve the quality of our life, and at the same time make fundamental scientific breakthroughs and knowledge advances. So I think it's, I have a saying myself, we do picoscale science. You know picoscale? Picoscale is a sub-nanometer scale. Picoscale science, nanoscale engineering, a microscale application. So we across the different land scales. So even we call nanotechnology, sometimes we can call picoscience. And then we go for real-world application. So I think at the end, we not only do outstanding science, but what the science can do for change the human society, to benefit the human society. Something truly technology, like what? You know, discovery of the optical fiber?
Yes.
Make this across Atlantic this kind of World Wide Web communication visible. And this was from a very basic research at the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
And in the invention of World Wide Web, this has just changed the whole world. And the discovery of a giant magnetic resistance make the computer head, reading head, small and faster, so we can have faster laptop. This kind of scientific discoveries eventually make technology breakthroughs that truly push the human society to a new horizon, to a new level. And we never thought this before. And just like you say, we missed the old, good old days, right?
Right.
Maybe in the 10 years we miss today.
Yeah, but when they make those quantum crystals so that then you can go back in time, you can enjoy the 1960s or any of those on those time warps, you know. So it'll be all new. Anyway, I want to thank you, Dr. Wang, for being on our show and audience. God bless you, and look definitely at the articles and the papers that are attached to the show, because you will learn a lot and you will appreciate Dr. Zong Wang's work that he's done. Thank you again, Dr. Wang.
Thank you very much for giving me this platform, and I wish everyone happy and healthy.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.